outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Hey, I got a lesson from history here.
Oh, I like history.
This is way back to World War II. I guess they had a little... I'm reading this Lindbergh biography, Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah.
Transatlantic flight.
Yeah.
Didn't know how involved he was in the whole World War II buildup, and he was anti-war. He was trying to keep America out of the war, and then he got accused of being Hitler's lackey. So when this,
That probably wouldn't be fun.
Yeah, I saw this in the New York Review of Books, and I thought, this is interesting. It's Auden on non-platforming pound. You go, what?
What?
Yeah. Auden was a famous writer, and Ezra Pound was a famous writer. And I guess Ezra Pound had come out with a...
Wasn't he like a chief justice or something like that?
Who, Ezra Pound?
He was
a poet.
Okay.
Anyway, there was some anthology being done in 1945. Random House was doing an anthology of poetry. And the earlier book... Ezra Pound had been included in it. They were doing a redo of that book,
and he got kicked out.
He was leaving him out because he was started expounding for fascist policies. He was anti-Semitic and racist, and he was hero worshiping.
So
praise
he got benched.
Hitler and Mussolini. Yeah, so they took him out.
Nice.
And one of the defense was Pound, by his deliberate and consistent actions over a long period of years, sacrificed any claims, in my opinion, either to be the title poet or the title American. To which W.H. Auden, who was also a writer of that time, wrote a response to that. He was concerned about the censorship of it, and he said, "To your honor, you may have not taken the evasive course, but said straight out that your only objection to the poems is that their author is a traitor. On this issue, shall a book be judged by what it contains or by the character of the man who wrote it?" Now, that's an interesting question.
Huh.
And the reason this came up in the article I was reading was just saying, you know, there's a number of pastor types that have been defrocked recently, finding that there's financial abuse or sexual abuse, or, you know, some big time guys who've written some big time books. And the question is, when a big time guy
throughout their library
screws up, do we? That's a great question to me, because I find that I do.
You do?
For the most part, I do.
Huh.
At least, I mean, I've been really touched by some books that some guy writes. And then I find out he, you know, cheats on his wife, or he, you know, divorces his wife and does whatever, or he dishonest in business or whatever. And I find myself not wanting to read future books or actors from Hollywood, right? You watch movies, you've enjoyed them.
No, I totally get the personal response of going like, no, they're not my favorites, so I don't know that I really want to go seeking them out. But I think I have been behind the curtain of life long enough to realize I ain't got no heroes back there. I've not met the man who looks like Jesus that is without sin and shame. And I have come to realize one of the most important things is having an unsanitized understanding of the messiness of people's lives, appreciating the good while not excusing the bad.
So some artist you find out has been involved... Michael Jackson, good case in point. New documentary out on him. They've known for a long time. He had something for young boys. And,
right,
you know, now it's kind of been more documented. So now people are going, well, I can't enjoy Michael Jackson music anymore. I never did to begin with, so I'm not sure it's going to affect me a whole lot. But it's that kind of thing. Because once I lose respect for, and I mean, I don't mean find out someone is flawed, because I'm with you. We're all flawed. So I don't mean flaws, but I'm talking about some kind of major, they don't even pretend to live to the things they write about or do art about. Or
sure.
Like a Mel Gibson movie. I know he did The Passion. I haven't watched a Mel Gibson movie, even some of the ones I enjoyed. I see them, they're on repeat somewhere, and I go, I just can't watch it, man. He did some angry stuff with, you know, got kind of a bad moment with a police officer that was recorded, and then there was something else that happened with his kids.
Yeah,
and I get turned off by that.
I get that. I think I've learned to go like, you know what? We got to test everything and hold fast to that which is good. I don't want to throw away the good that actually comes out of a life. I want to give appropriate honor for the fact that that's good. But that does not mean they have God's endorsement on the whole of their life. It's just that moment. I've just known too many people that I'm going like, you know, in my background and in sort of the Vineyard movement, we had guys that have power gifts. They had a genuine power gift. They could move and operate.
Which is a weird term, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I know.
Power gift?
But
really? I mean, they function in the supernatural.
They function in the supernatural to the benefit and blessing of a lot of lives, and yet their moral character sucked. And I'm just going like, oh, most people cannot do the math here. It's sort of like, this must be false and must be the devil. And I'm going like, no, that's the mercy of God helping broken, hurting people. But that does not give the endorsement of God to this guy's life. That's wrong, needs to be confronted. And at first, that was a really difficult thing to kind of come to grips with. Because I had grown up with a more simplistic little formula going like, if that fruit's there, then he must be a good guy. And everything must be fine. And only to experience that, wow, there's not just one or two of those dudes. There's a mess behind the curtain. And I'm struggling to make sense of that. And I've learned to go like, I don't want to throw out the value of God's mercy in touching broken lives. And I don't know that God just works through people's lives that are just great. He works through messed up people.
He does. I find there's too much to read that comes my way every day. And I find a loss of passion to read somebody who isn't serious about their own writing.
I completely concur.
But Alden said this, which you would really like what he said. He said, begin by banning his poems, not because you object to them, but because you object to him. And you will end as the Nazis did by slaughtering his wife and children. Interesting point. Yeah, he said once you decide that you can exclude someone because you don't like their point of view, where does that stop?
I would agree with that.
But I do. I've read authors that I've really enjoyed, and then find out there's some really major. Like I had a guy stay in my own home sleeping with a girl that was not his wife. Okay,
that's a problem.
I haven't read a book of his since.
No, I haven't either.
Do I love him? If he called me up tomorrow, wanted to have lunch, would I have lunch with him? I would. As a person, I would care about him. Hopefully he's found his way past whatever broken place that was in his life. But I don't know that. And when I asked him about it, what's going on? He just said, oh, you think I believe the stuff I write. I'm really just writing to the Christian marketplace. I know what they want. I'm not trying to live that. Now, Yeah.
That makes my blood boil.
It does mine too. And that's why I haven't read a book since. I've had other people like that where, yeah, I like them. I've been in their home, been friends with them. Then find out, man, they, you know, went through a marital deal and said things about it publicly that weren't true by what I knew from the other person in the partnership in the marriage. And so then you go, wow, really? That's kind of, and then I just lose my passion to read. If it was the only book in the universe? I probably would.
But I think that's normal as far as a reaction and a response. I just know that, you know, recently, you know, some folks that I have known personally that, again, have operated in a realm of the supernatural that is quite astounding. And yet I knew the behind-the-scenes mess of their life. Yeah. And I had zero to no respect for those that fawned after the gift of the supernatural and ignored the glaring character issues. And I'm just going like, you know, this is why the church is in the mess that it is, because we're not honest with this. We don't confront what we need to confront, and we don't help people learn and discern that it's like, you know what? God can work. Who does God actually work through if he doesn't work through broken vessels?
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't think there's anyone on the playing field that does not apply to.
Right.
And so, you know, we want a more simplistic look at all this. And I'm going like, I can't find one. There's not a point that I don't have to continue to discern.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
But we don't raise people with that sense of, you know what? Don't be trusting in the person. Trust in the God that this is about. He's the one who will not disappoint. Pretty sure everybody else likely to.
And what's strange about it is you can be an effective ambassador for God if no one really knows what's going on in your life. But once they do, it's over.
So that's so also sad.
That's kind of strange
that's
as well.
Terrible.
Yeah. So how's your belief bias going?
I'm sure.
Or your just world hypothesis.
I really want to believe
or your
that
think.
Reality wins.
Or the Dunning-Kruger effect. Oh, you want to believe that reality wins?
We were talking about that whole, like, you know, what's going on, the whole college thing where it's like people are spending, you know, buku bucks trying to get their children into
just
prestigious
yesterday.
Institutions. And you're just going like,
And I have to admit, one of the broken places in my life, I did a happy dance. when the mighty have proved that they really are just out for themselves and couldn't give a crud about anybody else, I do a happy dance. It's not the better part of me, but yeah.
See, I don't have that same response. I look at that and I just like, oh, this is gross. Does no one care about just the reality of life merit and a level playing field? And can we let reality win?
If someone's gifted, their gift will make a place for them. And if they...
I want to believe those things.
That's called the just world hypothesis. Your preference for a just world, makes you presume that it exists.
I want it to exist.
Because one of the things I asked when that came up, we were talking about this before the show, and I said, yeah, well, tell me where it exists. Tell me where. Show me where. And you're like, oh, don't do that to me.
I do... That's where I struggle. It's like, no, I can point to the exceptions of that, but I still think at the end of the day, reality does win. It takes a darn long time.
For some. I think there are exceptions on that side too.
Really?
Yeah. Just look how replete nepotism is. How is it just likely that my son has the same calling I have to the ministry that I built? Right? No,
I wish people could see your face.
we don't do this on Facebook for live for a reason, but there's that. Or how many actors and actresses' wives and children get a much better opportunity to get into that industry than some gifted, you know, dramatist from Albuquerque, New Mexico? Right?
No, I understand all those things. I still just think when you factor in eternity.
Okay. Were you going to give me a just world in eternity? I'm with you. I'm sure that's going to happen.
I don't know how to be okay with the one we're in if I don't get to factor in that at some point in all of this, there really is, reality does win. You're not going to fake out an omniscient God. I can fake out people. I can pretend. But it's like at the end of the day, it's like, you know what? All of those things will be exposed for what they are. And then you're left with what is. And I'm going like, I want to live in the what is now. I want it.
You're whining.
I'm longing. I am yearning to go like, wow, to me, that is just so attractive. The whole, I got my thumb on the scale and I'm changing and I'm trying to manipulate and cheat and get ahead of the line. Just kind of going like, you know what? That's not helpful to anyone.
It's not. But it's just the idea that almost everyone will use whatever advantage they have to get in a better position to get what they want than people who don't have those same advantages are going to get. And to think the human psyche has the ability to go, you know what, this isn't really fair for my child because, you know, the African-Americans I know growing up in Watts don't have the same opportunity. And I'm not doing anything to help them have opportunity. So it's okay for me to do it. I think we all find the ability to justify that. The amount of lobbyists that put their thumb on the scale every day in our national laws. Remember the EpiPen thing? Remember that whole scandal? This lady has a company and a father who's a senator and somehow gets every school in America required to keep 2 EpiPen shots and calls out the specs on that shot where only her company makes that shot. And then the value of an EpiPen goes from $100 for 2 shots to $600 for 2 shots. And she becomes incredibly wealthy. All, to me, scandalous. There should be people in jail for that, for what happened in the economic crisis 2008. Just watched a big special on that and all these New York bankers that made sc- scads of money while they're ripping off the rest of the nation and people are underwater in their homes and lose their homes. I just think that's scandalous. No one does anything about it. No one goes to jail. No one's called it. So I guess when people do get caught, because as I read an article in the New York Times today.
That's where your happy dance comes from.
There are legal ways to buy your kids into universities. There are legal ways. You're going to spend $500,000. A university's going to let your kid get in. To pay another guy to pretend they're on the skull team to get into whatever. I was going, oh my gosh, they're just, you're caught for stupid. You're really not caught for bribery. You're really caught for, there are easier ways to do this.
No.
The Just World Hypothesis, by the way, is brought to you. Someone sent me, Arnita, who was on this podcast this fall, sent me this thing. It's from the School of Thought.
Ooh.
There's 24 biases that affect the way we humans think. When we think we're
only 24.
Well, 24 they've listed. Okay. And what's interesting, this is a group that's for critical thinking. And I think this is hilarious.
Okay.
I've watched critical thinking be the thing that Christians accused our schools of trying to do to their children because they were trying to make them critically think through religious things and disaffecting kids from faith. So back in the 70s and 80s, you always heard this critical thinking.
Isn't that the whole higher criticism thing?
No, that's a Bible thing. That's different. The critical thinking is don't just take rules your parents gave you. Look at the world. Look at the way it is. Make choices off critical thinking when you're really thinking through it. Christians were totally against it.
At arms for actual thought.
And now, because the world has become what it has, I hear Christian groups all the time now advocating we need to teach our kids to be critical thinkers. So it's always depends on who's doing the lying. If we're doing the lying, we don't want critical thinking. If they're doing the lying, we want critical thinking. But I think that's funny because I've watched that change in the 30 years I was doing Bridge Builders from Christian groups. And you just say the word critical thinking and you'd watch Christians just, you know, go to war inside. And now I hear Christians go, we need more critical thinking in our kids. Our kids are, I agree with you.
We did then and we do now.
Yeah, but we weren't wanting it then. Not people I was, but not people I was with. I'm going, really? So I've got 24 of these. I'll see how many of these affect.
Nice.
We probably
won't. How biased am I?
You already
dinged me for like 4 or 5, I think.
Well, when they come up, I like dinging people. I'm guilty of all these, probably. It's great to just think the way we think that's just intelligent is very biased, and we don't have a sense of the bias already in our thinking, which leads to some bad decisions. Like there must be a just world out there somewhere. There will be in the kingdom when the kingdom.
See, that's why I add eternity to it because I don't live under the delusion that.
But when you first start talking about it,
I learned. And I don't know how to utterly verify this, but I learned that there's not a Hebrew word for the word fair. Hmm. It just is there isn't a word for it.
Like with tilt-a-whirl and Ferris wheels, those kind of fairs are just a fair world, a just world.
Your fair share. I just don't want fairness.
Why did they not have it?
I don't think there is fair. There's different and uniqueness. I don't think God has the sameness.
But how? Why do you think people, I mean, I hear this accusation much to me, life isn't fair. Because it isn't.
It isn't. And it's not going to
be. But there's an expectation in the human psyche that it should be. Is it just uniquely American that we're all on a level playing field? Because the British have had royalty forever. Nothing's fair there.
You know that. I think the word we're yearning for is justice. But I don't think we like that one. That one could be used against us.
You got something you want to confess, Brad?
No. Oh, okay. No, I think we like the idea of fair when somehow I'm not getting my fair share of what I think I should.
Right.
We somehow are wanting a level playing field where it's all even.
Where it's going to advantage me. That's when I want a level playing field.
I think so.
Yeah, I notice it's unlevel and I'm not on the upper side of that.
And so I want a level playing field.
But if I'm on the upper side of that.
I want that.
I never think of it being unfair.
Isn't that interesting?
isn't that crazy?
Is there a fairness bias in there?
Because we have to find it. I haven't read through all these, so I don't know yet. But I've noticed that there's that sense that everybody has for a world that's fair and just. And if you work hard, you get ahead. If you, you know, we all start on a level playing field, but we don't. There's all kinds of advantages built in.
The problem is I don't believe there is a level playing field. I do think when you look at things in light of eternity, we have a God who will be a righteous judge and to whom much is given, much is required. We don't have the same standard on anything because of the absolute uniqueness of everyone.
Right.
And so I think we have words of equality and we have, and I'm just going like, yeah, but those are kind of just words because they all have to be qualified because the world in which we live doesn't have the same outcomes for everybody.
But before Jesus gets the last word on everyone and everything, which he doesn't have yet.
Right.
We live in a world that's unfair.
Totally.
And we always complain about the unfairness that we're victimized by.
Rarely, if ever, the one I'm advantaged by.
Right. And looking at the world the way it is, and I've had political interests my whole life, and I get more and more disillusioned by the weight of the thumb on the scale, by corrupt politicians, by lobbyist groups for healthcare, whatever you want to name, that skews the law to their own advantage, just like the EpiPen thing we talked about. And I get frustrated. There's nothing we can do to make the world more just. And I was saying that the other day to God. There's nothing, I don't know any way, anything I can do other than speak out, but that's pretty weak. And the word that hit my head right after I said that was generosity. I can live generously in a world and mitigate some of the injustice. Can I fix it all? I cannot. But one of the things that humans can do in an unfair, unjust world is be generous with others instead of drawing all the advantage to myself and exploiting it for all it's worth.
Uh-huh.
I found that's something that's just grown on my heart the last few weeks.
Yeah.
I'm watching God just go, I can't fix the problem. I can be generous to that person and fix it for them. I can be generous to that person.
Isn't that really the reflection of his heart?
Yeah.
Because I just end up going like, we have this lust for fairness that I just don't think exists.
It not only doesn't exist, our sense of fairness is only when I am the one being unfair to. That's how selfish our sense
of turned it into a verb.
Of a just world is. Yeah, but it's weird because, man, I'm really passionate about unfairness when I'm its victim. I'm not passionate about so much when I am its benefactor.
Yeah.
So anyway, that'll.
What's fair about that?
But that's the parable of that's the parable of the vineyard, isn't it? Where the guys come work first part of the day and all the way through, and he pays them all the same at the end. And the point is, if I can be generous, what is that to you? I gave you what you said you would work for, and I'm giving him the same thing. Who only worked an hour. Now I grew up on a vineyard, man. I'm working all day. I'm getting paid the same price. Yeah, I'm not a fan of God's generosity, but I'm learning to be. I want to be a fan of God's generosity. I don't want to be a fan of what's fair for Wayne, and is this fair enough?
Can I ask? I know people get irritated when I always ask my why questions.
Only one person wrote an irritated email. Now you've got the whole podcast audience up there in rage.
I go like, gosh, what is it in us that has that response if I'm one of the early workers? When we look at other people and we see that they got blessing, seemingly in disproportion to the one I got.
I worked for mine. They got theirs.
And I'm now ticked. Why do we have that?
We're selfish, broken, disgusting little creatures that God loves.
Okay,
and God only knows
that's
why.
That's an interesting end to that. No, but I do. We somehow go from the... I would love to be a person that could celebrate the blessings and the generosity bestowed on somebody else, as opposed to always inserting myself in the equation and trying to then do the math as to, well, did I get my fair share? And there you have that word.
Yeah.
My fair share. It's kind of like as if somehow there's a justice ethic that always applies to me in this. And I'm going like, why do we insert ourselves in that? How come I can't just celebrate? Oh, wow, isn't that wonderful?
I'm excited. You got more than you worked for. That's awesome. I'm so happy
for you. I've never heard that response.
I haven't either. But Jesus was somehow looking for it, right? That's why he tells a story. If you stop comparing yourselves, you'll never figure out how to live in this world if you're going to compare yourselves to other people.
Yeah,
Paul warned us on that.
1 Corinthians, I think it's 10.
2 Corinthians.
Where it says, you know, they that compare themselves with themselves are unwise who do so. You just go like, well, that kind of includes everybody.
But
I know.
It doesn't lead to understanding. That's the point. God's generosity and the way God wants to work in a broken world was very different. But for me, instead of getting all hyped up now about things that are unjust, which I still, if I get a voice,
I'll do it.
But the way I can take that passion and do something wonderful with it is look to be generous in the world.
Yeah.
Especially to those who are on the downside of the unlevel playing field we all live in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so if we're going to take an hour on each one of these, we'll never get there. That was just world hypothesis. That's the ninth one in this list.
Help me out and understand. What are they poking at? Because I don't want to give up on the yearning and desire for that.
For the just world?
Yeah.
Oh, back to that. I don't think it's a matter of...
Because they say that this impairs your thinking. It stuffs it up or whatever it is, the phrase that they use on the headline.
It gives you a bias. And I think it's more for people who just say, well, everybody's got the same opportunities I have. It's that just world hypothesis is I'm believing this is a just world when I'm the benefactor of it.
Okay. That,
I think that's
That gives it context.
Yeah. You presume it exists because it works for you. And I think all of us, you know, we are white males in a world dominated by that. And so we are on the benefiting side of every unlevel playing field.
Not much anymore. We're on the, you got a target on your back now.
Not nearly so. No, I don't think that's true. Anyway, belief bias. This will be good. This is what we're doing right now. If a conclusion supports your existing beliefs, you'll rationalize anything that supports it.
Okay.
It's difficult for us to set aside our existing beliefs to consider the true merits of an argument. In practice, this means that our ideas become impervious to criticism and are perpetually reinforced.
Yeah, that's probably not good.
Yeah.
No, I can get...
But they've got praying hands here, which is... it's in the logo.
I know. There's a little bias in just the logo they chose there.
Yeah, no, it is.
No doubt. I look at this and I go like, okay, so... What do I do with a 2 + 2 = 4 belief? Where I'm going like...
It's not a belief. It's a fact.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a belief.
So you're talking it's more in the opinions of things.
Yeah, just like I think all legislators are corrupt. I believe that. Now, there's probably a few righteous dudes there. I don't think they last long, whatever. That's a bias I have. When I hear any news story that says Congress sucks, I believe it. I don't have to think twice about it. I have belief bias.
Nice.
And so it's grown in my heart over the years. It gets reinforced.
Yes, it is a mountain.
It is. Now, I don't know that I'll ever get free of my belief bias.
No, probably not in that one. No.
No, I that's what it means. It means I only look for supporting evidence. I don't honestly consider evidence that would say, wow, that I may be wrong about that.
I don't want to chase this rabbit all the way off the trail, but I think that is one of the biggest problems we have with our social media data world that is being run by algorithms, because it's no longer just allowing free exchange. It's forcing me into the corners.
That's what you believe.
Where that's just what I get reinforced.
Can I give you any information that will change your belief about that?
Yeah, and you're just going like, wow, this is not helpful for learning or for actual discourse.
No, it's not. That's true.
And it's polarizing our society, and it's actually accelerating the divide.
But if you're on the more liberal side and Facebook's algorithms skew to the liberal side, then you don't see it as, well, this is an unfair playing
field. It's just confirming I'm right.
Well, and it's taking off the field things we know are stupid and untrue. That's belief bias right there. If I don't believe it, it's stupid and untrue.
Wow.
Yeah, and then it hampers the kind of conversation as a community we can
have. How to become a Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then there's self-serving bias. This is the second one. You believe your failures are due to external factors, yet you're personally responsible for your successes.
Nice. Yeah. If it's good, I got it. And if it's bad, they did it.
Many of us enjoy unlearned privileges, luck and advantages that others do not have. It's easy to tell ourselves that we deserve these things whilst blaming circumstances when things don't go our way. Wow.
Hmm.
That's
So how do you become aware of these?
When judging, they got a little thing at the end. A belief bias was this: a useful thing to ask, when and how did I get this belief?
Okay.
We tend to automatically defend our ideas without ever really questioning them.
That's yeah,
good to question. Okay. The second one, the self-serving bias, is this: when judging others, be mindful of how this bias interacts with the just world hypothesis, fundamental attribution error, and the in-group bias.
Which, that's like too much of a mouthful.
Well, that was too many things we hadn't even read about yet. We did do the just world. How this bias interacts with the just world hypothesis.
See, I'm revealing my bias. I do long to believe in a just world where...
We're back to that.
We are. Because I'm just going like... I think that's something that God has imprinted as a longing that I think is more of a reflection of him and truth, but it's not going to happen before eternity.
No, see, I'm fine with that. Because the kingdom of God is a world in which all is fair and just, and every person is measured on their own ability, response, light, whatever. Yeah, I agree with that. But the real world...
The fallen one in which we traffic and exist.
Do you ever know a person who has an advantage who doesn't take it?
I've known a few.
Okay.
I have known a few, but that's a short list.
Did they last long?
No. People got ahead of them. They're not leaders in their field. Their car got passed and run over.
There you go.
No, I do, because I end up going like, when you start to buy into the kingdom values, you do make yourself incredibly vulnerable to the less than kingdom people of this world. I do. I struggle with that because I feel like, God, I feel like as I say yes to your values, I get set up to be taken advantage of.
Go back to last week's podcast. We're talking about healing. We look to the Gospels and we see this, man, Jesus healing people. Man, I'd like to do that. This is the part we mostly ignore from the Gospels. We see the guy who's living in the kingdom get lied about, slaughtered, and murdered. And that's also the example. You live with the priorities of the kingdom, life's not going to go better for you in this world. It does. It makes you vulnerable to the abuse of others. It does. I don't know how to avoid that either.
No, I agree. And I think I'm at a point where it's like...
That's pessimism bias, by the way.
Gosh. What's not a bias?
Pessimism bias is you overestimate the likelihood of negative outcomes.
See, that's balanced by my just world.
I do. I do.
Yes, you do.
Yes, I have a pessimism bias.
Yes, you do.
Because I can always look and say, okay, this is what could happen, and then it rarely does, right? But then there's optimism bias.
I got that one.
Yeah, you do.
That's why we're friends.
You do, Tigger. You overestimate the likelihood of positive outcomes.
Woo-hoo!
There can be benefits to a positive attitude, but it's unwise to allow such an attitude to adversely affect our ability to make rational judgments. Okay, there we go.
I like it, though.
You like optimism bias?
I laugh more because of it, because it helps me through my tears.
Well, then, it overcomes your pessimism bias.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. See, I'd like on a golf course, I always joke about it. I get up to a tee and I'm going, oh, this one's going right in the lake over there. Now, I'm not really trying to do that, but if it does, I'm like, there you go. I knew it. If it doesn't, I get to be happy. Look at it, I missed the freaking lake. That's awesome. Oh, boy.
Wow.
But I'm learning. I'm learning because what is it? Worry is borrowing. Fear from something that hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah, it's
something like
totally
that.
Unproductive.
Yeah, I'm really learning to live in the space of today. I'm not doing my pessimism bias by outcomes out there. Not anymore. I used to.
I want to just pull it back for just a second.
Pull what back?
Embracing the values of the kingdom and how it makes us vulnerable.
Yeah.
I want to so embrace, and I think this is where my just world bias comes in, because it's like I'm going like, Lord, I don't want to live in a negotiated place because, I want to live in the kingdom value ways, even though I go like, I do not know how to stop the bad guys who don't want to embrace those values from corrupting and doing stuff. It is so frustrating because in order to stop them, I have to be like them. And I don't want to.
Exactly.
Do you have an answer other than...
Suffer, sucker. That's where pessimism bias will help you. Suffer, dude. No, I think that's the choice. You're going to become like them, to be defensive, to be advantageous.
I just can't do that.
No, I can't either.
Because I'm just going like, no, because I don't want to become infected with that. And as much as God is freeing me from those things, I don't want to willingly go back to fight that way.
I don't either. But so that means you are going to get stumped.
And you lose.
And you get to walk away and go, you know what? God's responsible for the result of this, and God will be gracious to me anyway. Yeah. Even if I get, I'm going down that road again where I'm going to get probably, I could get easily walked on. And I'm like, God, you know what? It's worth it. It's worth it. It's worth it to try.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
Okay, number three. Boy, we're moving fast. Although we've done
there's deep, baby.
Four,
come on.
Five and six. We've done that, optimism and pessimism. But groupthink. You let the social dynamics of a group situation override the best outcomes.
Huh.
Dissent can be uncomfortable and dangerous to one's social standing. And so often the most confident or first voice will determine group decisions.
You know what? It's so weird. I think of the one reality show that has so infected our younger generation of life that they've grown up with it. It's Survivor. That whole bit of you watch endlessly, people that lead or stand up, they get kicked off. And so you have a whole bunch of people that have decided the way to survive through life in high school and all this is I'm just going to ride a little bit below the radar.
Lay down, not be noticed, don't
Yeah,
make
and I
waves.
Just go like, what has that done to our society? Because that so permeates so many people's subconscious. I don't know what the survivor bias is, but I just ended up going like, that's such a bizarre, I think that has not been helpful.
Well, I think it's intuition anyway, the human condition. I mean, people were doing that when I was in grade school, but before Survivor was even on. It's not so much the cause of a problem as it identifies one that's just there.
Yeah.
It's hard to be the contradictory voice in a room full of people that are excited about something.
Yes.
Hold on a minute. We might be missing something here.
Yeah, you do mark yourself for death.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've just because of my relationships with certain people over the last, say, 5-6 years, I'm much more aware of the racism bias in our culture, and I'm happy to speak up to it. But boy, white people, evangelical Christians, you could see it in their eyeballs when you just say, well, and I don't mean in meetings. I just mean sitting with somebody and you hear a comment, you go, you know, hold on a minute. Could you be missing something there? And you kind of, and it's like, don't give me that, man, all that stuff about affirmative action. And that we've done enough for them. And I'm going, oh my gosh, we haven't even begun to do enough to help level a playing field. And, but yeah, people don't want to talk about it. So, you know, I've noticed in groupthink, I'm not very good at groupthink. I'm really not.
No,
I don't mind. I don't mind I being say, the no, contradicted,
no, you're
marginalized
group.
Beat with a whip and sent out into the wilderness. I've got good practice at that.
Yeah.
Let's do one more. We're running out of time.
Affects the group
we may
fake.
Have to do another show on this. Hate it. But anyway, negativity bias. This is the Eeyore, so not only this. I don't even know what it is yet. Let me read. You allow negative things to disproportionately influence your thinking. Yeah, I don't know that I do this.
Sorry.
I'm so positive. I'm basically a positive person.
Right.
The pain of loss and hurt are felt more keenly and persistently than the fleeting gratification of pleasant things. We are primed for survival, and our aversion to pain can distort our judgment for a modern world.
Let's talk about that just a little bit. Because, no.
Well, it's got to be a little bit. We got people missing their train stops.
So what? You know, that's my bias.
That's a lack of compassion
that's
bias.
That's
the Barnum
Whatever
effect.
Whatever, there it is. No, I look at that. Most people that are negative, I don't know anyone that enjoys being negative.
Okay.
No, I mean,
I do.
Maybe
that's all I'm thinking. I do. I do. Which is when you tell me I can't, I do.
I think that's a protective mechanism because they're
hurt. Reactance. You'd rather do the opposite of what someone is trying to make you do. That's reactance. I have that one.
Okay. Yes, you do.
So you accuse me of not being negative? I'll be negative. Or vice versa.
No,
go ahead.
I look at – I don't know anyone that enjoys being negative. Maybe you do.
Oh, thanks.
No, I know.
Throw me under the bus.
I'm saying I don't know of anyone that enjoys
it. I don't think they do.
And I've looked at that from a standpoint going like, gosh, there's something there that is hurtful and hasn't been processed. And this is the best sort of defense mechanism towards that they have.
That's exactly what it is. Yep.
And I just end up going like, wow. Because as opposed to just reacting to them, because that's so hard. When someone is just always kind of critical, negative, they're not my favorite people. I don't find a tremendous well of love that just bubbles up naturally for them. I don't know what
really?
Bias that is, but
I do. They've been people that have been crushed by life. Yeah.
No, that's what I'm learning to go like, gosh, I have to keep that in my front view so that I have compassion to go, how can I be of help to this moment as opposed to reactive to it? And because I just think a lot of folks are just, you know, they're carrying a lot of hurt and you have no idea. I mean, I sat with an 80-year-old guy just for lunch yesterday and just listening to the lifelong stuff he's been carrying. And it just broke my heart.
Hmm.
He just sat there going like, wow, the things that are left as imprints and I don't know. I came away with a whole lot more compassion of just going like, wow, we have no idea what people are going through.
We don't.
They're dealing with.
Which is, there's one for that too. We'll have to get to it next time we do this, I guess.
Biases everywhere.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com. We'll be right back.